Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the only tropical fish podcast that is hosted live on the air. Join the passionate tropical fish keeper, Aqua Alex Cardinelli, for a fun and educational tropical fish episode. This is the Aquarium Hobbyist Podcast, where freshwater and saltwater fish and aquariums are discussed. Aqua Alex has over 12 years of fish keeping experience and over 3 years of podcasting experience. He will show you his passion for tropical fish with this episode. You can call in live at 516-418-5674 to chat tropical fish and join the chat. Now, let's chat fish. Here's Aqua Alex live from his fish room next to his 125-gallon aquarium in West Palm Beach, Florida. Aquarium Hobbyist Podcast is now live. Welcome to the only tropical fish podcast that is hosted live on the air. Join the passionate tropical fish keeper, Aqua Alex Cardinelli, for a fun and educational tropical fish episode. This is the Aquarium Hobbyist Podcast, where freshwater and saltwater fish and aquariums are discussed. Aqua Alex has over 12 years of fish keeping experience and over 3 years of podcasting experience. He will show you his passion for tropical fish with this episode. You can call in live at 516-418-5674 to chat tropical fish and join the chat. Now, let's chat fish. Here's Aqua Alex live from his fish room next to his 125-gallon aquarium in West Palm Beach, Florida. Aquarium Hobbyist Podcast is now live.
Aquarium Hobbyist Podcast, and welcome to Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Aqua Alex Cardinelli. Thank you so much for joining me for the launch of Aquarium Hobbyist Podcast here on Blog Talk Radio. Today, Aquarium Hobbyist Podcast debuts on Blog Talk Radio, and for the first time ever, Aquarium Hobbyist Podcast is live on the air. Blog Talk Radio now has a tropical fish podcast for freshwater and saltwater aquarium hobbyists. So, Aquarium Hobbyist Podcast is now live. We are live on air. Our episodes are no longer pre-recorded, and that is because I like to have fun, and having fun is by doing live episodes. Now, don't worry, if you can't make a show that's live, and you miss an episode that's live, don't worry, you can listen on demand at any time by clicking the episode link that's on Facebook or other social media platforms. So, again, if you are unable to catch a show live, have no fear, you're able to listen to it on demand anytime by clicking the link that is promoted on social media. Fish keepers can now call in and join the chat. Call in live at 516-418-5674 to tell us how you got into fish keeping, your favorite fish, or join the discussion. So, fish keepers, if you're listening, you can call in and interact and join the fun chat we're going to have tonight. So, tonight I have an awesome debut planned for Blog Talk Radio and Aquarium Hobbyist Podcast first live episode. I have some wonderful special guests tonight. I have Michael Tyrell from Off the Deep End Aquatics, and our headliner guest tonight are Big Rich Price and Josh Price from Ohio Fish Rescue. And I really, really enjoy Ohio Fish Rescue, and I really like what they do, and I support what they do for the aquarium hobby. So, here's the agenda for today's episode. I will tell you about my new 125 aquarium and what my plans are for it. I will discuss freshwater spiny eels, fire and tire track. I will discuss one of my favorite fish, red hook silver dollars. I will talk about monster fish substitutes. You can indeed keep oddball fish. I will give good replacements for some common monsters. And fish keepers are welcome to call in, like I said earlier. The call-in number tonight is 516-418-5674. And then we got some awesome special guests. Again, Michael Tyrell, Big Rich Price, and Josh Price. So let's get this episode started right now. And we're going to start by talking about my brand new aquarium. I spent many, many years looking for a 6-foot aquarium, but financially I couldn't afford a brand new aquarium, because I wasn't working at the time. I recently got a job and I started saving up my paychecks, and before you know it, I had enough to get a 125-gallon aquarium. Now, I saw an ad on Facebook Marketplace for a 125-gallon aquarium that came with the stand and a canopy and a canister filter and, of course, the tank and a lot of fish supplies that came with it. So I jumped all over it and I picked it up. It's a very nice tank. However, it's a very old tank. I think this tank is pre-1990s. However, with that being said, older tanks are good because they can hold water for a while if you know what you're doing. They have thick glass, and I like older tanks because the glass is much safer than today's aquariums where they can get scratched easily. So I bought this tank for $250. It was a great deal, and I think it was one of the best deals I've ever had in the aquarium hobby. This $125 for $250 with everything included, including delivery. So, but let me tell you, it was one hell of a job getting a tank in the house. It was really heavy. Old aquariums are super, super heavy. I almost broke my back carrying it along with someone who was kind enough to help me carry this aquarium. So, I almost hurt my back carrying this tank in, but we got it in, and I cleaned it out because it had a lot of dirt and sand all over the sides of it. But we got it up, and I put water in it, and I tested to make sure there was no leaks. There was no leaks. I added some prime and some of my biological media from my tank that the fish were currently in, and I let it sit for a couple of days. So today, I just added my fish to the aquarium. And I added my 5 red hooks, my Lima Chauvinose, my Common Pleco, my Gibby Pleco or Sailfin Pleco, my Rare Adonis Pleco, my Ropefish, and my Clown Knife to the aquarium. So the fish are doing really well. Now, my plan for the 125 is to have a red hook silver dollar community tank with catfish and oddballs. I would like to get a silver arowana and also maybe a tiger shovelnose catfish. Now, I know these fish are going to outgrow my aquarium, but I'll rehome them when the time comes and when they get too large for my aquarium. I think this is going to be a really fun aquarium, and I can't wait to start stocking it with some fish. Tomorrow, I'm going to the local fish store to purchase some fish with whatever money I have left from paying my bills, and I can't wait to see what kind of fish I will be getting. I'll be speaking more about my 125-gallon aquarium in the future here on Aquarium Hobbyist Podcast. It's time for our first guest here on the Blog Talk Radio launch for Aquarium Hobbyist Podcast. This fish keeper has a monster tank and has a passion for monster fish. He has a wonderful YouTube channel and an Instagram channel, and we're going to learn about those on the show today. So, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Michael Tyrell from Off the Deep End Aquatics. How are you doing today, Michael?
Good. How you doing, Alex?
I'm doing great, enjoying the tropical fish hobby, and I just got a 125.
Congratulations. That's a nice size tank.
Thank you. Yeah, it's my first big tank in a while.
Awesome.
So how did you get into the tropical fish hobby?
Well, I started keeping when I was really young. It started with fishing, mostly, and then moved into some smaller tanks, like 20 gallons and 29s. But we went and visited my aunt and uncle down in Florida one year when I was around like 14, 15. And my uncle was big into discus, and he was trying to breed at the time. He had a bunch of tanks, and that's kind of what really got me going, was seeing what he was doing and his projects. And when I went home, I went out and got a bunch of discus. So around like 15, something like that, I started trying to keep discus, and that was my first passion.
Oh, nice. So your first fish were discus.
And not quite, but that was when I first started trying to take it serious kind of thing.
Ah, cool.
So first fish were, the first fish I can really remember were guppies, and I remember keeping Oscars too. So I think a lot of people get into the hobby with Oscars.
Yeah, Oscars are like the puppies of fish.
Yes, they are.
So what would you say is your favorite fish?
Right now, I would say that's a tough one, but probably arowana. I think arowana are my favorite fish, followed closely by stingrays.
Nice. So when and how did you get into monster fish?
I think the first monster fish I kept was an arowana. I kept a silver arowana, but I really didn't have the proper size tank, so I ended up rehoming years ago. But arowana have been a passion of mine for a long time, so I think that's really what got me into monster fish. And something about keeping the larger fish I find more interesting. I really enjoy it. So on top of arowana, most of my fish nowadays are monster fish.
That's cool. I love monster fish as well. They have a lot of personality, and they're more attractive than the little fish, I think.
I agree. Definitely a lot of personality. Like you say about the Oscars, a lot like puppies, a lot of them.
The silver arowanas are pretty cool. I like arowanas, too. I'm thinking about getting one.
Yeah, I love silvers, and I have three small albino silvers that I'm growing out right now.
Nice. Albino silver arowanas are gorgeous. I might get one of them.
Yeah, the yellow is amazing. So I'm really excited about them. I'm excited to watch them grow.
I like the black arowanas too, and the giardinis.
Yeah, me too. And I've always wanted to keep a giardini. It's just they get so aggressive. I've avoided them for a while. So I'd have to probably give one their own tank. Every once in a while, you might find one that does okay in a community setting. But for the most part, they tend to be so aggressive that I've shied away from them. But they are nice because they don't get too big like the silvers do. So a little bit more manageable, but if they have to be kept alone, it's not quite as manageable.
Yeah, a one fish per tank is kind of boring.
Yes, it is.
So what kind of monster fish are you keeping now?
So besides the arowanas, I got a lot of stingrays also. I got 7 stingrays. I have a bunch of iridescent sharks, so they're probably my third passion. I love iridescent sharks. I've liked them since I was young. I have a couple of giant gourami. Let's think. I have some hybrid cats, TSN Acara hybrid and an RTC TSN hybrid, growing them out. So they are a lot of fun. And yeah, that's basically it. Oh, I also have a small Mabu puffer that I'm growing out. So he's going to be awesome. I'll definitely have a lot of monsters once some of these smaller fish grow.
Nice. The freshwater puffers are pretty cool. The MBU puffers are nice.
Yeah, and they have a lot of personality, a lot of personality. Always watching you, always following you around. I love that.
Nice. That's pretty cool. So I know you recently built a large aquarium. Would you mind telling us about it?
Sure, yeah. So earlier this year, I decided to build my first plywood tank. I decided to build mostly because I couldn't get a pre-made large tank in my house. There was really no way due to doorway restrictions. So I knew I had to buy some. I knew I had to build something. I couldn't buy something. So actually, I know another guest that you're having on is Ohio Fish Rescue, and I used a lot of their ideas on how they built their 3,000 gallon tank to build mine. So mine is 10-foot by 6-foot footprint, and it's fashioned pretty close to how they built theirs, at least the skeleton of it. And I kind of took it and ran with it for my own. So it's about 1,100 gallons to where I fill it, not including filtration. And then I tied in my 300-gallon tank into the same system, too. So I got one big system now. So I have the 300-gallon for the grow-outs and then the big 1,100-gallon plywood tank for all the bigger fish. So I love it. It was a tough project, but it took about maybe three to four months, something like that, but totally worth it. Extremely rewarding project, and I couldn't be happier with the result.
That's awesome. It's a gorgeous tank. I watched all your videos of it. I love it.
Thank you. Thank you very much. There was a few decisions I had to make, like the interior color, what I wanted the epoxy color to be was a tough decision because you want the fish to stand out, but you also have to worry about it getting dirty and whatnot. So I chose a light gray, which I think the fish really pop against. I'm really happy about that. I don't love when algae builds up on it, but at the same time, it's not a terrible look. So the color was a big deal to me just for being able to videotape it and take pictures of the fish and whatnot. So I really wanted the fish to stand out. So I appreciate that. Thank you.
You're very welcome. So is there any fish that you would like to add to the aquarium that you don't have already?
I'm getting pretty close to where I want to be, but I would like a few more eels. I have one big fire eel. I'd like a couple more fire eels if they could all get along with everybody. And that's pretty much it. I originally wanted to put my giant gourami in the big tank, but they've proved to become aggressive, so they kind of need to be separated from a lot of fish. So it's going to be mostly stingrays, arowanas, hopefully the Mabu puffer eventually once everything gets large enough, iridescent sharks, and a couple of hybrid cats.
So what would be your advice to people who want to start keeping monster fish?
Come on, give me that. Come on.
Get a big tank. So obviously if you want to start keeping monster fish, do your research on whatever fish you want to keep. You know, we want to be as educated as we can to give the fish the right kind of diet and obviously the right water conditions. But you know, I think we all have made the mistake at some point of buying a fish that outgrows our aquarium. If you've been in the hobby for even a short time, a lot of people do that very easily. It's very easy to see a small little fish at the pet store and just want to buy it. But, you know, we got to make sure that we have the space for that fish, just like any other pet. We want to give it the best life possible. So my biggest advice is get a big tank. Know how big the fish you're going to get could get, and try to get as big of a tank as possible.
Well said. I definitely agree with you on that. So I know you have a fantastic YouTube channel. Can you tell us about that?
Oh, well, it's a work in progress. I appreciate you calling it fantastic, but it's a project I've been really trying to work on and get better at, trying to get better at making videos. And it's mostly just I try to be real and tell, you know, anybody who's interested in watching my progress on different tanks or watching progress on the fish that I am growing and keeping. I just try to take people through the struggles, you know, different problems that you run into in the hobby, and show people how I've had to deal with them and take people's advice if they give it. Especially with YouTube, people are great about giving advice. So I look to the comments and things like that for anybody who can offer any advice to me, and I try to give any advice I can through the channel. So between the YouTube channel, Off the Deep End Aquatics, and my Instagram, Off the Deep End Aquatics also. Just try to share everything I can with anybody who's interested.
So listeners, make sure you check out Off the Deep End Aquatics, because it's a good YouTube channel. I enjoy seeing all the videos of the monster fish. And one video in particular I really enjoyed is the one where you actually caught your silver arowana moving to your plywood tank.
Oh, yeah. And unfortunately, I recently lost that silver arowana.
Oh, that sucks. Sorry to hear that.
Yeah, it was a tough loss. But as you know, they're jumpers, and I've lost another silver arowana in a similar manner to jumping out of a tank. But I created lids as best I could for the big tank to try to avoid that, and he still got out. So it was a tough loss. We're really sad about that, but we're going to try again, and I'm going to improve on the lids so that doesn't happen again.
Nice. Yeah, silver arowanas are jumpers, unfortunately.
Yeah, I lost another silver arowana close to the same size a couple years ago, too. So I knew better, and I tried my best, but it's tough to avoid. Sometimes they just find a way out. It's unbelievable.
Nice. So I know you have a couple of Facebook groups that you run. So would you mind telling us about them?
Sure. So I do like the species-specific groups. So one of my favorite groups right now that me and a buddy, Glenn Mickle, are running is United Arowana, and that's becoming big quick. So again, all you arowana lovers, anybody interested, please check out United Arowana on Facebook. And I also love my iridescent shark group, another species-specific one, and that's really directed to trying to educate people on how big the iridescent shark gets and how difficult it can be to keep, because they are sold in pet stores everywhere, and they're sold, they were even sold in Walmart for a long time, and we know that they just get so big, they really shouldn't be marketed to people. So yeah, check out Iridescent Sharks on Facebook also. And yeah, we've started a few other smaller groups. We started a giant gourami group also that people can check out, and Not Your Average Fish group on Facebook also.
Awesome. I'm definitely a member of all the groups, and I recommend all of our listeners to check out all of your groups.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. I definitely recommend them. A lot of good people in those groups, and a lot of educated people who can help with any problems, offer any advice, people all around the world. So it's an amazing community that we have.
Awesome. Well, I want to thank you for being on the show today. You did a great job. I enjoyed interviewing you.
Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it.
We'll have you on again in the future to talk about arowanas.
Yes.
I love arowanas too.
Yeah, what an amazing fish.
I agree. You have a great day and happy holidays.
You too. Happy holidays. Thanks, Alex.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye.
That was our very first guest here on the live edition of Aquarium Hobbyist Podcast here on Blog Talk Radio. Thank you, Michael Terrell, for being a wonderful guest. I really enjoyed interviewing you. And we'll have Michael Terrell again on Aquarium Hobbyist Podcast in the future as we discuss a fish that we both enjoy, and that is the silver arowana. So I'd like to remind all the fish keepers that are listening live, if you have any tropical fish questions or you want to join our discussion, you can call in live at 516-418-5674. That's 516-418-5674. Right now, we're going to go ahead and start talking about some tropical fish. And I'm going to start by talking about freshwater spiny eels. One of the first things people mention when they think of freshwater spiny eels, like fire, tie-track eels, peacock eels, zigzag eels, etc., are they really eels? Are they a true eel like the saltwater moray eels? Well, the reality is the freshwater spiny eels are not true eels. They're just a fish that has spines. So no, a freshwater spiny eel is not a true eel, but it's a bottom-dwelling fish that likes to dig in your substrate, whether it's gravel or sand, and they like to hide in the substrate that you have. Spiny eels are generally shy, very shy fish, but they're very peaceful as well. They ignore tank mates that are too big to eat. Now, towards their own kind, spiny eels run from being hostile at one extreme to relatively peaceful at the other. So yes, it is possible to keep multiple spiny eels in one aquarium. I love an aquarium that has a couple fire eels, a tire track eel, and other large growing spiny eels. Now, as far as size goes for spiny eels, it varies. Some eels, such as the fire and tire track eel, get pretty big, up to 3 to 4 feet in length, while others, like the peacock eel, stay at a manageable size from 8 to 10 inches in length. Now, when you keep spiny eels in groups, they tend to be more outgoing and more likely to settle down quickly and be more active. That is something that a lot of people who have kept spiny eels have experienced. These eels are more outgoing, more active when they are kept in groups. So, spiny eels are very common in the aquarium hobby. The most commonly seen species of spiny eels are fire eels and tire track eels. Now, spiny eels like to burrow, and they love places to hide. They need places to hide in your aquarium. Some good things to use for your spiny eel to hide in include rocks. If you make a nice rock formation, aka caves, you could use PVC pipe. That's perfect if you're going to have a large spiny eel. PVC pipe works well for fire eels and tire track eels, and it's great for the eels to hide in. So always, always make sure that your spiny eel has a place to hide. Otherwise, it will be very stressed, and it might jump out of the aquarium. Spiny eels have the ability to launch themselves out of aquariums, and it happens a lot. A lot of times, people lose fire eels, tire track eels, and other spiny eels from jumping out of the aquarium. Now, one interesting story I have to tell you about spiny eels is a long time ago, when I was a kid, probably about 13, 14, 15 years old, I got a fire eel as a Christmas present, and I put him in my aquarium, and I woke up the next morning, and he was wrapped around the Christmas tree. He had escaped from the aquarium. and somehow got into the Christmas tree. That was a very horrific sight, a very scary sight, because I really liked that fire eel, and I only had them for less than 24 hours. So keep in mind that eels, spiny eels, like to crawl out of their enclosures, and they can escape and lead to their death, unfortunately. Another thing I've noticed with freshwater spiny eels is they like to jump into the hang on the back filter. I've had this happen numerous times with many different types of spiny eels, but I find that fire and tire track eels are the most common ones that do this. They climb into your hang on the back filter, and it's a pain in the ass to get them out of the hang on the back filter without harming the fish. That's something that is very interesting, but I think it boils down to their personality and their nature to want to jump and explore things. So that's a little bit of information on freshwater spiny eels. I definitely want to do a show in the future with somebody that has more experience with me on freshwater spiny eels. That would be a great show. Right now I'm going to talk about fire eels. Now, fire eels come from Laos, Vietnam, Cambodia, Thailand, Malaysia, and Indonesia. They usually inhabit sluggish, lowland waters, including floodplains and slow-moving rivers. Now, it says that fire eels can reach up to 36 inches, but I feel given proper aquarium space, they can reach more like 42 inches, but still a very big fish. Fire eels would require a huge aquarium, 150 gallons and up, because they're going to get 3 feet to maybe even 3.5 feet, close to 4 feet in length. Like I said earlier, an abundance of hiding places should be provided, as this species likes to hide away during the day. Bogwood, rock caves, and PVC piping are all suitable for this purpose. Sand should be used as substrate, as the spiny eels often like to bury themselves. Dimmer lighting will encourage the fish to venture out from its hiding places more often. A close-fitting hood is required, as the eels can find its way through the smallest of gaps. Water flow should be fairly gentle, as the fish mainly inhabits areas of still water in the wild. Now, fire eels are omnivorous, meaning they like meat and vegetables. So I recommend feeding fire eels earthworms, market shrimp, cut-up pieces of tilapia, and things of that sort. I've never seen a fire eel eat pellets or flake foods, although never say never. You can never say never in the aquarium hobby or in life in general, but I think it's really hard to get them to eat pellets or flake foods. I would stick to frozen bloodworms, brine shrimp, Miesis shrimp, if you have to get them on aquarium foods. But I think feeding them earthworms, market shrimp, and tilapia is just fine, because that's what they get in the wild. Now, take baits for fire eels can be anything, basically. Anything too large to be eaten. You could put them in with cichlids like Oscars, Jack Dempsey's, Jaguars. You could put them in with silver dollars. You could put them in a tank that has arowanas. They do well with angelfish. So the rule of thumb with fire eels is anything too large to be eaten is okay to live with your tire track eel. Now, I'm going to be getting a fire eel for my aquarium, and I cannot wait. It's going to be something that's going to be interesting for my fish tank. So, switching gears now, we're going to talk about the second largest eel that is in the aquarium hobby, and that is the tire track eel. Now, tire track eels are found in Southeast Asia, including India, Thailand, and the entire Malay Peninsula. They inhabit moving waters. They often bury themselves during the day in the gravel substrate, coming out at night to feed on insects, larvae, worms, small fish, other aquatic inverts, plant matter, and detritus. Tire track eels are reported to reach up to 30 inches in length in home aquariums, but like the fire eel, I believe they can get even bigger than 30 inches in a home aquarium, provided they have the right tank size. So like the fire eel, tire track eels are going to require a tank 125 gallons and up, and like the fire eel, they're also omnivorous, so you could feed them the same things that you would feed a fire eel. And like the fire eel, anything that's too big to be eaten will be fine with them, tank bait-wise. And that is your information on spiny eels. If you're listening live and you have any questions on fire eels or tire track eels, feel free to call in 516-418-5674. Moving along now, we're going to talk about one of my personal favorite fish. That is the Red Hook Silver Dollar, Myleus rubberopinus. Now, the common name for red hooks are red hooks or red fin silver dollars. They are in the Myleus genus. They are in the Cirrhosalmidae family, and that's a family that includes Piranha, Pacu, Mentinus, Myleus, Myloplus, and Mylosoma. Red hooks are from northern South America, Ecuador, Venezuela, Colombia, Peru, Brazil, and more. They're a very easy fish to keep. Red hooks are very easy to keep provided they are housed in an appropriately sized aquarium with plenty of filtration, clean water, and other red hooks as they are a schooling fish. Yes, that's right, folks. Red hook silver dollars are a schooling fish and should be kept in a school. Red hook silver dollars grow to be about 12 inches in length when they're full grown, so they are a bit larger than other silver dollar species. So keep that in mind. You should have them in at least a 125-gallon aquarium when they're full grown. Now, red hook silver dollars are omnivores. This means that they will eat both meat and vegetables. Thus, they are not picky eaters and will quickly learn to eat any and everything offered. Some examples of foods that I personally have found red hooks to love include lettuce, market shrimp, bloodworms, blackworms, and krill. Provide them with the best quality pellet and flake food you can, and mix in other goodies mentioned earlier. Like I said, market shrimp, lettuce, bloodworms, blackworms, and krill. For the best quality pellets and flake foods, I recommend YourFishStuff.com, Omega One, New Life Spectrum, and Hikari. Red hook silver dollars are a schooling, larger growing sherrison that are suited for larger community aquariums. Red hooks should be kept in groups of three or more. You can also mix and match with other silver dollar species because in the wild, many different silver dollar and pacu species are found swimming near each other in search of food and protection. Because of their larger growing size, I would personally avoid keeping these with smaller fish like neon tetras because there is always the risk of the red hooks having a snack. They pose no threat to other medium to large fish. Hobbyists should be aware that occasional red hooks chasing each other is nothing to fret, as this is common behavior in Myleus and their family in general, and it's most likely a chance for them to establish a dominant red hook. Fish too large to be eaten are good tank mates. They can also be used as a dither for large aggressive cichlids or monster fish tanks. Tank mates can include, but not limited to, other Myleus species like the black bar silver dollars, Mentonous species like the common silver dollar or the tiger silver dollar, pacu, flagtail proctolotus, severums, oscars, angelfish, chocolate cichlids, fancy procostomus, corydoras catfish, arowanas, freshwater stingrays. The list goes on for tank baits for red hook silver dollars. Now, due to the fact that they can grow up to 12 inches, I would recommend a 125-gallon for a trio or more of them and larger. You can grow them out in a smaller aquarium. However, a big tank with lots of swimming space makes these guys thrive. 125 gallons to 1,000 gallons is the range for these guys. The more space, the better. Now, water conditions for red hooks. Very simple. So water conditions for red hooks are very simple. pH 6.8 to 7.4, 68 to 74 degrees Fahrenheit. Same water as any other hardy fish. You could use Amazon black water aquarium solutions to create a natural biotope with other South American fish. Water changes should be done weekly. My final remarks on red hook silver dollars. The red hook silver dollar is one of the most common Mytilia species available in the aquarium hobby. With them being so common, some fish in pet stores will often confuse them with the common silver dollar, Mentonus argentus. But they are both two different fish, with the red hook having a much different body shape and look. A red hook silver dollar will have a black-trimmed red anal fin, a.k.a. hook, and be much more thicker, wider, and longer than a Mentonus species. As red hook silver dollars mature, their coloration deepens. Red hooks may develop red spots, red patches, and even red stomachs as they reach maturity. It is normal for a newly added red hook silver dollar to be skittish upon arrival to its new fish tank. Leave the lights off for the full day when added to the aquarium. Make sure there are other silver dollars in the aquarium for it to feel safe. For states where piranhas are illegal to own, red hooks are your solution. Not only do they and other Mytilias have the piranha look and shape, but they are not aggressive and can in fact live with other fish while piranha can't. Plus, red hooks are a lot cheaper than piranha and are imported more frequently as well. Generally, prices from juvenile red hooks can be anywhere from $12 to $20, depending on location, an individual pet store, and larger red hooks can vary from $30 to $50, once again, depending on the area you live and your pet store. If you are looking for some activity in your predatory fish tank or monster fish tank, red hooks will add that activity. They constantly school and are always swimming. Their presence will eventually draw your predatory fish out from hiding, as they will realize that it's safe to come out because there is no bird or predators that would get them in the wild. Plus, no more food will go to waste. They attack like piranha when it's feeding time. They are one of my childhood comfort dream tropical fish, and a fish I always keep and recommend for someone looking for larger tetras. If you have any further questions on red hook silver dollars, please feel free to call in or contact me, and I will be happy to educate you more on red hook silver dollars. If you don't have any red hook silver dollars yet, consider adding a spark of red, gold, and silver to your aquarium. And that is the information on red hook silver dollars. I actually wrote that article that I just read to you for somebody that was looking to publish something on a website for Red Hook Silver Dollars, and it got published, I believe. I'm not sure if it did or not, but I think it did. But that's an article that I wrote, and I posted it on Monster Fish Keeper, so you can go check it out. There's some pictures of some of my red hooks on there as well. All right, our last topic before we get to our main event, monster fish substitutes. Now, I know a lot of people love monster fish like I do, but there are indeed oddball fish that can replace the common monster fish. So for pacu, the replacement for pacus could be silver dollars. They could be spotted silver dollars or tiger silver dollars, or they could be red hook silver dollars or black bar silver dollars. Those are better replacements for pacus. As we know, pacus can get 3 feet in length and very bulky. Very, very bulky. So it's always important to remember that pacus get huge. Okay, I see we have a caller on the show. I'm going to go ahead and take the caller. Hi, you're now live on Aquarium Hobbyist Podcast. Thank you so much for calling in.
Hi, guys. This is my name's
Hi,
Randy.
Hi, how you doing?
Randy Anderson. Good.
Hi,
thank
Randy.
You so
how
much
are you
asking.
Today?
Good, good. Thank you so much for asking. I've been an aquarium hobbyist for quite some time, and I've run into a situation. I have a Salvadorian house cleaner, and I have a big. It's about a 500-gallon freshwater tank, and I actually have some exotic fish, including the majority of them are piranha. And have you guys had any experience with piranhas?
Yes, I've actually kept piranhas before.
Oh, okay, then you know what I'm talking about. And I don't know if you've noticed, but they all have their own beautiful personality, and I'm able to tell them apart. Well, I left. This is really difficult. You have to excuse me. I left for on vacation. And I left the Salvadorian woman in charge at the house. And when I came back, she just came over. When I came back, she had actually, I had about 17, 18 of them. And she actually had taken about 9 or 10 of them out and had been eating them periodically.
Oh, my gosh.
Who are you? I thought you would understand. I don't know why you're laughing. I kind of wanted to see if you've ever had an experience like that, but I guess I'm just asking. You're laughing at me.
No, I actually haven't had an experience like that. I'm afraid to eat my own fish.
I didn't want her to eat it, and she ate almost all of them, and I was looking into the eyes of the other fish, and I can only imagine what they're going through. And I've been, why are you laughing?
I don't know.
I thought this was a real show, and maybe you guys would be sympathetic to the situation because of how much you love fish and how much I love fish. I can see that you guys are just laughing at me.
No, I'm not laughing. Wow, that was an interesting phone call. That was definitely a funny phone call. I enjoyed that, so thank you for calling in. If anyone else would like to call in, the phone number is 516-418-5674. Okay, so we talked about substitutes for pacu. Now we're going to talk about monster fish substitutes for red-tail catfish. We know that red-tailed catfish get really large, up to 4 feet in length. So there are catfish that you can have in your aquarium that stay much smaller than red-tailed cats and tiger shovelnose. Lima shovelnose come to mind. They're a very, very cool catfish. Lima shovelnose, some of them max out at about 18 inches, so they'd be perfect for a 125 or a 150. Raphael catfish are great. substitutes because they don't get as big, and they're a fish that a lot of people have access to because a lot of fish stores have Raphael catfish in stock, and they're pretty common. Another cool catfish that could replace a red-tailed cat or a tiger shovelnose would be an ornate pimodella catfish. Now, this catfish looks just like a tiger shovelnose, almost, but it's shaped like a pictus, and it's got a brown body with black stripes and a white face, a really, really gorgeous catfish. I think it's a catfish that is underrated in the aquarium hobby. They grow to be about 12 inches in length, and they like to be kept in schools, but they're absolutely amazing. They are somewhat rare in the aquarium hobby, but Wet Spot Tropical Fish carries them a lot, and you might find them on other tropical fish suppliers as well. So I actually had some ornate pimodella catfish back when I was living in Massachusetts earlier this year, and I had to rehome them because I was moving to West Palm Beach, Florida, as you can imagine. So I was really depressed about rehoming my ornate pims, but they went to a good home. And when I find some down here or they become available again, I'm going to pick up some more ornate pimodella catfish. Now, for arowanas are a very popular fish right now in the United States of America. If you really wanted an arowana and you had a 6-foot aquarium, you could get a Giardini arowana instead of a silver arowana. But Giardini arowanas are very aggressive. They can be very aggressive. But it depends on the individual fish. One Giardini could be mean, while another one could be quite peaceful, so you never know. But suitable replacements for silver arowana would be African butterfly fish or pink-tailed chalcius. So those are just some examples of monster fish replacements and fish that are considered oddballs. I'm going to do an entire show dedicated to this very topic in the future here on Aquarium Hobbyist Podcast. So, again, if you want to call in and chat fish, the call-in number is 516-418-5674. It's time for our next interview here on Aquarium Hobbyist Podcast, and I'm very excited for this interview as I have two wonderful fish keepers on the show today, two fish keepers that do a lot for the tropical fish community, and I'm very thankful for that. I've had them on the show last year around this time, so I figured that this would be a good time to interview them once again, because I'm sure a lot of things have been going on throughout the past year. So it is my honor and my privilege to welcome Josh and Big Rich Price from Ohio Fish Rescue to the show. How are you guys doing today?
How you doing, buddy? Pretty good. Watch yourself. Hey, I got a question for you.
Sure.
How come Josh is listed first?
He's the youngest.
And the prettiest.
You guys do great things for the hobby, and I really appreciate that.
Well, thank you. We try our best, and just keep at it and keep at it.
That's awesome. There's always something new at Ohio Fish Rescue. That's what I like.
Oh, yeah, every day. I mean, we make plans, and we try and get things accomplished, and then someone calls and there's a new thing coming in, so we have to scratch our old plans, or we're getting ready to go out to dinner. Someone calls and says, "I have a cracked tank. My fish are going to be, dead within the hour." And we have to drive out there and go pick them up right then and there. So you never know here at Ohio Fish Rescue what's going to be the next day.
I know one of the things we talked about last year was you turning your pool into a pond. How has that gone?
It turned out really good. You know, it was just an idea, a thought I had, and Greg Woodstock and Aquascape made that a reality, and it's really nice now. We've got, what about 10 huge monsters in there now? Maybe more?
One more than that.
We got 3 3-foot iridescent sharks.
3 gar.
3 alligator gar, 1 at 4 foot, 2 at 3 foot, the platinums.
5 red tails.
So that's 6. And then 5 red tails, that's 11. Then you got the dovine, 12. The tilapia, 13. The giant gourami, 14. You got the spirata, the Indian shovelnose, 15.
2 hybrids.
Oh, and 2 huge hybrids at 4 foot.
Pima.
So we got set. Oh, and Brutus, the arapaima. We got 18 large fish in there now. Colony of convicts and cichlids.
Oh, nice. Armored puma are beautiful.
Yeah, and they're personable. We've trained them to where we stand on one side of the pool, and they all come a running. And there ain't nothing like Brutus when he pops that water and scares everybody to get his food.
He must love food.
Oh, yeah. He's a big boy. We actually picked up 3 more arapaimas since him, and we're growing them out inside. One's at 2 foot, and 2 are at 18 inches.
Nice.
They'll be big in no time.
I'm assuming that they're all wild caught. I don't think they breed them in captivity.
Yeah, sure they do.
They do?
They're in the hobby. You'll see every spring and fall, you'll see arapaima babies for sale everywhere. I know because when I see the sales, I'm like, oh, no. And about 4 months from now, I'm going to be getting calls for arapaima. And I'll be darned if it ain't almost to the date. People are like, oh, they're getting too big.
I know. I don't know why pet stores and fish stores sell armored pumas since they get over 4 feet.
Well, you know, there's a lot of fish that get big. And basically, my thinking is this. I don't mind any of the other big fish because there's many reasons for this. Red tails, when they get big, I still have people on a waiting list for big red tails. Tiger shovelnose, I got people on a waiting list for that. Arapaima, I got people begging me for some big ones. You know, there's different zoos or public aquariums where theirs have died of old age or something. They need a replacement, a big one. Well, I have places for big fish like that. The one fish is my biggest problem is a pacu. Now, I'm not saying the fish is a bad fish. They're very personable. They're like a puppy. They get to know your routine. They come to that side of the tank when you walk in the room. I mean, they're really a great fish. But the problem is, for one, they oversell them. Two, they sell them way too cheap. So, you know, little Timmy can go in and buy a 10-gallon tank and 3 red-bellied pacu that look like vegetarian piranha, you know, and they sell them for like $2.99, next to nothing. So now, within a month or two, them are way too big for the 10-gallon. They're way too big for a 55-gallon. Then they have to keep buying bigger tanks, and they become a problem. Well, here's the next problem. Anybody that has big pacu knows that it's very, very, very hard to get rid of a pacu. Nobody wants a large pacu, including the public aquariums. I've had to start all the different public aquariums that we supply. I've had to start doing, Josh, bundles. Where if you want these 5 red tail and these 4 tiger shovelnose, you're going to have to take 4 of the big pacu. They don't want to take them. There's nobody out there that wants big pacu. So that is my biggest problem fish. It was such a problem that we went ahead and started making window clings for pet stores, and we will back your store if you promise not to sell pacu in your store. You get a window cling that goes by your front door and it says, this store is backed by Ohio Fish Rescue. And there's a lot of stores that have agreed to stop selling pacu because it is the biggest problem in the industry. The other fish, not so much. It's a problem, but not as much because when I get them, I have a place to take them. People want them still.
That's awesome. I definitely agree with you on the pacu. I love pacu, but they get too big, and they are in a lot of the fish stores in my area. I see them. But they don't sell well down here, thank God.
Well, the problem is they're basically sentenced to death. They're going to die at one spot or another. I've known other so-called fish rescues that take the pacu out in the woods and just, you know, throw them in the woods and they die. That's his solution. And, you know, it's crazy. And I can't name that rescue, but I was very, very mortified when I found that out. But, you know, that signifies there's a major problem right there. You never hear of anybody doing that to red tails, you know, or tiger shovel nose. So.
I love tiger shovel nose. Those are my favorite catfish.
They are. They're very neat. They inquisitive. We got the big tiger shovel nose in the pool, and they'll come up to you, and you kind of like swash your hand at them. They swim away, but if you turn your back on them, they'll come up to you again behind you, trying to check you out. A lot of people think they're trying to bite them, but they're not. They're just trying to get close and check out what's going on. Do you have food? I mean, they're a funny fish. They're really smart.
What are some of the projects that you guys have been working on?
Oh, geez. Josh, you want to take this one?
Well, some of the last projects we started doing is, if you haven't noticed in one of our last videos, we put more tanks up along the whole back of the pool, the 58,000-gallon pond. We've got two 190-gallon tanks there. We've got a 240, which is actually still empty, but it's set up in place, ready for water, ready for fish, waiting until we find that fish that we're going to put in there. We're still moving a lot of things around. But, yeah, we've just been setting up tanks left and right, and then we've got the 2,000, the 1,000, and the 700 against our far wall that we're going to be setting up here within the next few months here soon so we can get more water online.
The only reason it takes so long is we've got to build stands for them. We just set up a 300-gallon for Pittsburgh, the puffer, and now we can start concentrating on the other empty tanks. But then we got a donation of a 500-gallon tank from the Reef. It's Josh's one of his favorite new stores now. And the guy there was very knowledgeable and helpful, and he wants to help in the situation. He will not sell red tails, tiger shovel nose, or pacu, any of them. He will special order them for you, but he'll actually make the trip to your house, check out your tank, and then he'll order them for you. So there's a lot of people that are getting on the bandwagon and helping out the situation.
That's true. I don't know how true this is or not, but there's actually a store called Aqua Imports, and they're claiming to have a tiger shovel nose that maxes out at 20 inches. I guess they're calling it an Orinoco shovel nose.
There's actually about five true species of actual tiger shovel nose. Some do stay smaller, but, I mean, the smallest species I know of right now, it still gets around 30 inches or so. And then you can go up to the true monster sizes. You can, what's that one called? That's with the P. I'm drawing a blank right now, but he gets over a true 5 foot long.
Yeah, they get huge, but they have beautiful colorations.
Oh, yeah.
P. Caruth can. That's the name of it.
You want to say that one more time? P. Karuskin?
P. Karuskin. I think it's pseudoplastoma Karuskin.
Okay.
And he's a he's a spotted shovel nose, so he doesn't have the tiger stripes on him, but he is the largest of the tiger shovel nose family.
Nice. There are actually suitable replacements for fish like tiger shovel nose. There's the lima shovel nose for catfish and red hook silver dollars for pacu.
Oh, yeah. Which are all nice fish. I love the lima shovel nose.
I actually have a lima shovel nose about 6 inches right now, and I have a whole school of red hooks.
Well, I hate to say it, but mine's bigger. I'm kidding.
I'm sure.
Just trying to be funny. Next question?
Hello.
Hello. Sorry about
there
that. My phone went dead for a second.
That's no problem.
So what are your plans for 2020?
We just did the addition, so we don't have no addition plans. We're trying to set up the three tanks behind the 58,000-gallon pond as a backdrop along with all the plants. And we'll get that finished here soon. Next summer, our main plan next summer is to get the backyard koi pond built. As you know, we had a koi pond built in the front yard by Aquascape and Greg Woodstock. And, someone stole all the koi. So now we're building one in the backyard that we can actually take all of our koi out of the inside, because these koi are taking up a big space of a chunk of our aquariums inside. So I can take them out and put them in the pond outside in the backyard and not worry about people stealing them. Then we can open up more of our tanks for the big fish.
Nice. That sounds great. I love koi, and a big koi pond in the backyard sounds like it'll be a nice little relaxing spot outside.
Well, that and every summer we get, the beginning of summer, in spring, we get a lot of people that don't want to open up their koi pond, and they call us and just say, take the koi, I'm filling in the pond. And then every winter, when people don't feel like winterizing their koi pond, they give us a bunch of koi. So on top of needing a place to take them, we also need a place to hold them here. So we're building a very large koi pond in the backyard.
Nice. That's awesome. Down here where I am in West Palm Beach, Florida, we could actually do a tropical pond year-round.
Oh, if I lived in Florida, I would have ponds and ponds. I'd buy my own bulldozer and mini excavator. I would have nothing but big ponds, and we'd take care of our fish that way. It'd be so much easier for us.
Yeah, there's a lot of people that have tropical fish in ponds. Sorry for interrupting you.
Oh, that's all right. That's all right. Down there, it's very nice. There's so many people that could do, but if we were down there, we could do a lot more than what we're doing up here, because we have to do it indoors. And I'm trying not to get a warehouse, because this has been enough out of my pocket already. And to get a warehouse to do more is going to cost us more, and then more on electric and gas, because the warehouse will be taller and bigger. So all of you're going to have the lights for the warehouse. You're going to have the heating for the warehouse. Not to mention, I have to keep it at 80 degrees to heat all the pools. So it would be not beneficial to us to get a big warehouse. Heating my fish room is very short. It's 7.5 foot, 8 foot ceiling, whatever it is. And it's super insulated when we built it. So it's easy to keep that room at 80 degrees.
Yeah, this winter will be a true test of if we can keep this 58,000-gallon pond heated far enough and have backups on hand just in case the heater does go out, because we've never been through an actual winter. The thing was built in March, so it was at the end of winter.
Well, the fish have not been through a winter. We've kept it warm at 80 degrees for the last 7 years.
Well, I'm just saying, like out there, it's open to the open air. It's, 40 degrees in the air.
Right.
But
our pool heater is the one that does it. But yes, I do agree. We need a spare secondary way to heat the pool in case our big pool heater goes out on us and it shuts off. We don't have but maybe 2 days of residual warmth. So we're going to need some way to pump water up to a heater and then put it back to the water until we get the big pool heater fixed. Like if your furnace went out, your house would be cold until you got it fixed.
That's true. Now, I know recently you got in 3 big fire eels. Can you tell us the story about getting the fire eels?
Well, those were not rescues. Those were something that one of my fish buddies have. And I've always wanted the big fire eels. We've always loved them. So when he told me he was selling them, I went ahead and purchased them for the show tanks here. So, everyone else who stops by and loves eels online could, come in Ohio Fish Rescue and see all these awesome eels. And right now I think we're up to 7. We've got 3 fire eels, 3 tire track eels, and 1 of the black spotted. And they're all between 2 and 3 foot.
All in the 1,000-gallon.
Yeah.
Now, another thing is people, someone once said that we're fish hoarders. They don't realize how much fish we give away. We not only find homes for all the smaller fish, but we have periodic, you know, visits from major public aquariums that come here with huge trucks and take, you know, a lot of fish. Like the last one was here, took, I think, 18 or 19 of the 3 foot long fish. And, you know, one was 4 foot and there was a couple that were like 2.5 foot. But, you know, we don't hoard fish. Here's my theory on it. I keep one or two of the biggest on display here so people can see exactly how big that red tail or that tiger shovel nose or that iridescent shark can get. Everybody that comes here is like, oh my God, I never realized they got that big. And that's the shot quality that we need here so that people can learn and see and not buy these animals. So I try and keep one and two of every type of species. Now, people say you're a rescue, you shouldn't buy fish. Well, we're also fish aquarist enthusiasts. We have had a lot of these fish who are our own personal fish long before we opened the rescue. So if Josh wants something, I don't see a problem with Josh getting what he wants. It also helps out because we didn't have any big fire eels. Now people can see that they get as big around as a Pepsi can and, you know, 2.5, 3 foot long. I've heard of them getting to 4 foot. I've never seen them that long. But, you know, it makes for a nice display and people definitely learn from coming here and seeing.
So, and expanding on that topic, you know, we get so many fish in, but like you said, we rehome fish faster than we can get them in. So, you know, there could be times that, you know, someone comes in and asks us for fish and, you know, we might have two pleco here or we might not have nothing. You know, some things we won't give to your general aquarius. But, you know, say if a zoo came in, like your normal hobbyist can't handle a 4 foot catfish. But if, you know, a zoo came in, we would be more willing and apt to send out our herd and give them to an aquarium to where they would have better care than they are in our own personal tanks here.
And we say that because there's, you know, zoos and public aquariums have vets on staff. We don't have that here. They have, you know, all kinds of government-funded money that they can buy all kinds of better filtration than we do here. We do the best we can with what we got, so we definitely turn over fish for a better life for them. But, you know, like I said, we try and keep one or two of all types here. Now, to expand on what Josh said, we've had people call here and said, hey, I just got a new 150-gallon tank. Can I get one of your 3-foot tiger shovel nose? And they get mad at me when I tell them, that, you know, we can't. I just cannot give it to you. And they're like, why? I'm like, well, right now we have 4 or 5 extra, but they're in a 3,000-gallon, and you want to take it home and put it in 150-gallon? They can barely turn around in there. Now, tiger shovel nose are bendable and they can turn around, but it's not a viable home for them. I give our fish away for free to people that can provide a better home than we can. So all the little fish are handed out no problem. Now, I get a bunch of Oscars all the time, bunch of Placos, a bunch of like kissing gouramis, anything else, Josh, all kinds of tiger shovel nose bait, little ones, you know, 8, 12 inches. Cat.
Paku.
Well, we get a bunch of Paku, and we do give them out, but only we tell them when they get too big, call us back, and we'll come get them. So we're letting other people.
Okay, I'm going to interrupt our interview for a quick few minutes. I see we have a couple of callers, and they've been waiting for a little while, and I do like to take callers on the show. So we're going to go ahead and take the first caller. Hi, you're now live on Aquarium Hobbyist Podcast. Thank you so much for calling in.
Hey, how's it going? I wanted to want to thank you for having the show the way you do. I really do appreciate it. It sounds fantastic. I've gone ahead and invited quite a few of we're part of a Facebook group that we're hobbyists, and we truly appreciate the show. I do have some questions about fish and specifically, if you would, electric eels. Have you ever at this time have any experience with electric eels?
I have not, actually. Unfortunately, where I live in Florida, they're illegal, so I won't be able to keep them personally, but I have seen them in Massachusetts before. I came close to owning one in Massachusetts, but it was too much money for it at the time, and I didn't have the money for it.
Oh, that's too bad. Yeah, so one of the things that we've been working on, so you see I'm also an inventor, and one of the things that we've been working on is actually for the electric eel to actually power some LED lights, and some of those lights would be connected directly to the Christmas tree. So,
oh, cool.
I mean, that's kind of... Yeah, yeah. So only problem is we have to agitate the eel at times, and we're not right now. We're working on a battery storage system, so that when we do agitate the electric eel, then transmits that electricity to a battery cell, and then from there it powers the LEDs. We've tried it quite a few times. It's been working quite successfully. We have a Christmas tree lit up right now, as a matter of fact. Problem is, out of five electric eels, we've accidentally killed three. I think we've kind of drained them batteries, if you know what I'm saying. So we're trying to really, really critique the process.
Nice. It sounds like actually a fun experience. How did you get your electric eels?
Well, I know a gentleman down from he's from Brazil. And the gentleman, I don't know if I want to say it, but it's illegally, if you would. They were illegally imported into the United States. And as I said, I had five of them. I only have two now. But I do have more being imported as we speak.
Oh, that's cool. I hope you have fun with your electric eels.
Yeah, no, I do. I have quite a bit. If there's anything that you might need, any other type of tropical fish down from the Amazon or Colombia or Venezuela, please let me know. I have connections, if you would. Anything you need, I'm talking about anything, I can actually provide that. So I just want you to know that.
That's great to know. I'll definitely contact you.
Yeah, but just, you know, be very vague when it comes to the description of the things that you need. Because I have been raided once before, but by the fishing game, they did find quite a few rare and exotic fish. And I've gone ahead and I've paid those fines, but I'm back in business, if you know what I'm saying. So anything that you might need, you let me know, and I'll help you. So anyways, I don't want to take up any more of your time. I just want you to know that I'm offering that for you. And one other thing, that other gentleman that called in who was sobbing and crying over his, I believe he was crying over some piranhas, is that correct?
Yes.
I'm not sure what that was all about, but, you know, I think you should probably be a little bit more sensitive to his needs. The man sounded like he was really sincere about the loss and the pain that he was going through. So anyways, you might want to consider being a little more empathetic. But besides that, sir, thank you so much for your show. I truly appreciate it, and God bless.
Thank you very much for calling in. I appreciate your call.
Thank you so much. I believe some of the other gentlemen are ready to speak as well. I could either remain on the line and I could just stay quiet. Sometimes we all kind of get into the call together and we discuss as a group. I don't know if that's something you're willing to do.
Sure, we could do that.
Okay, thank you, sir.
Okay, the second person that is now live on the air, you're now live on Aquarium Hobbyist Podcast. Thank you so much for calling in.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello, my name is Rabbi Moshe Rubin, and I'm calling from Indiana, the Meridian Hills neighborhood in central Indiana. And I appreciate you bringing on our group, as the other man did say, that we're a diverse group of people. I am an Orthodox Jewish rabbi, but I believe that all of God's creatures are at home in our aquariums and our ponds, and I love to have nature around me. One thing I'm looking at is because I am an Orthodox Jew, I follow the word of the Torah, and the male species are supposed to be circumcised. Do you know anyone who will provide that service for me in my aquariums?
I'm not sure about that.
Have you ever heard of this before?
No, never before.
Well,
the commandment
I can vouch for this gentleman. This is a sincere call, and I have heard of other individuals performing that act.
Well, you would think that the host being down in Florida with many Jewish people, that this would be a service that that there'd be other people like me that are into following the word of God as commanded in the Torah.
Well, I let me say I don't know if this gentleman is very godly for that matter. I mean, I did hear him laugh at that poor gentleman that was crying about his fish. But anyway, I'm not here.
I also heard that. Very disturbing. I heard that as well. And it was it's the first call. I am new to the program, and to hear him laugh at a man who lost his fish to a Guatemalan housekeeper eating them when he was entrusted the care of those fish to that Guatemalan, it's very disturbing that they laughed and mocked him. It was a sin.
Whoa,
yeah,
I wouldn't go there. That's a little bit too far.
Perhaps. You might be right, sir, but it was quite disturbing. There's quite about 47 of us in the group that we're in. And, you know, it was very disturbing. Everyone started lighting up the chat. And so, anyways, I don't want to talk. Some of these gentlemen, I mean, I'm against it. They wanted to boycott the show, but we're not for that. We're here for knowledge and information. And hopefully you're able to provide that. So, if possible, I don't know if you're able to help my dear friend here out with the circumcision of some of these fish, or if you know anyone around that area that might be able to perform that act.
I know. I've never heard of that before.
Particular breeds? Do you have particular breeds that you would recommend? Maybe ones that could be easier to circumcise. Maybe their genitalia are more exposed. And are external, it would be easier to access.
I don't know. I don't really know about that kind of stuff.
Do you never, I mean, you've been around fish for many years, I assume. Do fish generally
Yes.
have external genitalia?
They do, but I don't circumcise them.
Well, you are defying a commandment of God. It's in the Torah.
Amen. Amen.
Okay, moving along. I've had enough of that. We're going to continue with our interview.
But, you know, if a zoo came in, like your normal hobbyist can't handle a 4-foot catfish. But if, you know, a zoo came in, we would be more willing and apt to thin out our herd and give them to an aquarium to where they would have better care than they are in our own personal tanks here.
And we say that because there's, you know, zoos and public aquariums have vets on staff. We don't have that here. They have, you know, all kinds of government-funded money that they can buy all kinds of better filtration than we do here. We do the best we can with what we got. So we definitely turn over fish for a better life for them. But, you know, like I said, we try and keep one or two of all types here. Now, to expand on what Josh said, we've had people call here and said, hey, I just got a new 150-gallon tank. Can I get one of your 3-foot tiger shovel nose? And they get mad at me when I tell them, you know, we can't. I just cannot give it to you. And they're like, why? I'm like, well, right now we have 4 or 5 extra, but they're in a 3,000-gallon. And you want to take it home and put it in 150-gallon, they can barely turn around in there. Now, tiger shovel nose are bendable, and they can turn around, but it's not a viable home for them. I give our fish away for free to people that can provide a better home than we can. So all the little fish are handed out no problem. Now, I get a bunch of Oscars all the time, bunch of Plecos, a bunch of like kissing gouramis, anything else, Josh? All kinds of tiger shovel nose bait, little ones, you know, 8, 12 inches.
Paku.
Well, we get a bunch of Paku. And we do give them out, but only we tell them when they get too big, call us back and we'll come get them. So we're letting other people actually grow them out that way and see that, you know, they definitely get too big and they're happy to call us back. So, yeah, we get all kinds of fish that we give out readily, but we have to kind of thin through the herds for our bigger fish.
And to elaborate on him one last time. So, as you all know, we've been doing this whole YouTube channel thing to help fund everything we do at Ohio Fish Rescue. You know, sometimes if we're not out doing a rescue or, you know, we're not doing anything around here, we need something that we could, you know, make content on. So we try and do things to educate the masses. So, you know, if I happen to buy this new fish and I can do some sort of educational speech on it, I can do that, teach all the hobbyists, and hopefully it'll send a message to all the hobbyists thinking they're going to buy an Arapaima. But then we do a video on the growth rate of an Arapaima and say, hey, we got this thing at 3 inches in September. Here's 1 year old. He's 35 and a half inches long. That's 3 foot in 1 year.
Right. And, you know, you do the information on, like, the tanks, how to reseal them, stuff like that. Definitely people learn a lot and listen. And you'd be surprised how many people actually listen to us. And I'm surprised.
That's awesome. You guys should consider doing a podcast. I think you guys would be great for that.
Oh, stop it. We're so busy now, there's no way we could take on any more work of any other type.
I hear you there. You guys do a great job on what you guys do.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome. So my next question is, if someone has a monster fish, how would they go about rehoming them to you?
The best way is get a hold of us through Facebook. You know, you can message us through YouTube, and, you know, it takes us a while to see there. But, I mean, it's the best thing is we have our phone number on Facebook. Look us up, Ohio Fish Rescue. You can call that number, and then you'll talk directly to one of us. If they're close enough and you can handle it, you can drop it off. If it's a far trip, then I can start planning the trip that way and align up other rescues that direction. But that takes up to a month to 3 months to plan. If it's something you need right away, an emergency thing, we can also post them up for, you know, free to good home on our website, or not our website, our Facebook page. And then we'll help you, you know, try and find a home for it with somebody close to you.
We also had a lot of people that don't have Facebook and they are on Instagram. And they've been sending a lot of messages through Instagram to help rehome these fish as well.
Messages through Instagram, Josh gets. So you can do it that way too. Just search for Ohio Fish Rescue. There's always a way to get a hold of us. Our number's on there.
That's awesome. So what is your favorite fish?
My favorite fish has to be the Arapaima. Josh, what's your favorite fish?
I can't shoot. There's one. There's too many of them.
That's the answer I was looking for. I was hoping that Rich would say all of them like he did on his YouTube video.
Yeah, it's hard because, you know, but, you know, I keep going back to the Arapaima because we used to be known for our big, we had a big Arapaima named Bubba. And, you know, he got to 5 foot. And we were known for that. And then we didn't have an Arapaima for years. And, you know, it's always back, you know, to Arapaima. I love them things. They grow so quick. I look at them. I can relate with them, you know. But everyone we get is Big Bubba, Big Papa, Big Brutus. I mean, they're all just such big names, you know. They just remind me of me, and, you know, I love the Arapaima. But then you'd want me to choose from other fish. I can't because they're all every fish has something I like about them, so it's hard.
I'm the same way. When someone asks me what my favorite fish is, I, I have to at least tell them five because I don't have one favorite. I have a lot.
We usually ask them in which tank.
So do you have any fish that you would like to get that you don't have currently?
There's always something on that list, but we try and not actively go out and search for fish. So we basically just wait until, you know, the fish comes to us and we're like, hey, we don't have one of them, or, you know, we've always wanted one, and then
right.
we go ahead and buy it. So we try and not actively search, and, you know, that's just adding to more of the problem.
That would be fish hoarding. And we're not trying to do that. But as they come through, we will keep them so that people can see the size they get to. But there is, like anything albino and platinum, we're trying to fill up our 2,200-gallon tank. So I don't want to say trying to fill it up, but if anything comes in like that, we keep here so that it goes into our big tank. And, you know, it's our platinum or albino tank, and it's got the black tiles, and the fish look great in there. So that's our newest thing, is trying to get them kind of fish. Yeah, that's about it.
Hopefully one day albino tiger shovelnose will come to exist.
Oh, I seen them, and I just saw an albino granulosis yesterday. I was going to send the picture to Josh. I didn't send it to you, but oh my God, he was as fat around as a football in the, or a basketball in the middle. Biggest granulosis I ever seen, and he was fat and white as can be.
See, we actually ran by a leucistic tiger shovelnose. He was 28 inches, and he was $200. This was back in the days of MFK, so I want to say, you know, 6 years ago. And it was down in Georgia. We were going to make the drive to go get it, and then a few days after, we said, okay, let's pull the trigger. It was gone.
Oh, that sucks. That's life, though.
Well, now that's a $2,000 fish. All these,
I know, prices have gone up a lot.
Oh, my God, have they ever.
A world of media.
I know Predatory Fins had some sort of unique tiger shovelnose in recently.
Yeah, they get a lot of platinum and albino stuff, but, you know, he charges for them, so.
He's actually got a platinum Niger cat there now, and he's only about 5 inches long, but he wants $3,500 for it.
Wow. But that would be a nice catfish. I would buy it if I had the money.
Let me see. Feed the family for 3 months and take care of all bills or get a fish.
Well, I want to thank you guys for being on the show today. I had a blast having you on.
Oh, it's over already. Okay. Yeah, it was great.
We'll have you on again in the future. I love interviewing you guys.
Dang, we're always here. We're always willing. There's a lot of the YouTubers out there I tried hooking my buddy up with, and they all charge to do this kind of thing, and I don't see that. How's that helping the situation, you know? If you got some knowledge and you can help the situation, get on there and talk about it.
I'd say
I
next
agree.
Time, bring some more questions.
Yes.
I will.
Harder questions.
I'll try to come up with some harder questions for you. We'll have you on in the beginning of 2020.
All righty.
You guys have a great holiday. Thank you so much for being here.
You too, buddy.
Take care.
All righty. I want to thank Big Rich and Josh Price from Ohio Fish Rescue for coming on the show today. I absolutely adore what they do for the tropical fish hobby. They provide a lot of homes to monster fish that are unwanted, or sometimes people can't take care of them. I really respect everything they do for the tropical fish hobby. And we're going to have Big Rich Price and Josh Price on the show again. in 2020, probably in January, and hopefully we can work it out where it'll be a live interview where some of the fans of Ohio Fish Rescue can actually go ahead and call in. Anyways, we've reached the end of today's episode. I would like to thank everybody that tuned in live and also everybody that tuned into the on-demand section of today's show or the archive of this show. So basically, thank you to everybody that listened to this episode of Aquarium Hobbyist Podcast. We are now live on Blog Talk Radio, and we are now officially a part of Blog Talk Radio's pet section. We are the Tropical Fish Show here on Blog Talk Radio. So with that being said, thank you so much for tuning in. Thank you to everybody that called in. I enjoyed your calls. As funny as they were, I enjoyed them. I know that they were jokes. So thank you for calling in. And I hope everyone enjoyed today's episode. We'll see you on Tuesday when I talk about my favorite fish. And as always, the phone lines will be open on Tuesday night. With that being said, enjoy the aquarium hobby and enjoy your tropical fish. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. Thank you, Josh, Rich, and Michael for being wonderful guests. And I'll see you on the next episode of Aquarium Hobbyist Podcast. Have a good night, everybody.